Well, good evening. Greetings in Jesus' name this evening. It's a pleasure to be here with you all. I see a lot of familiar faces, maybe a few that aren't, but I think most are. My wife and I are from the Mine Road congregation, and we have the privilege of sending our children to your school, Summit View Christian School, and we're grateful for that. So thanks for creating a school that's been a blessing to our family. Adopting technology with discernment. My wife and I were spending some time with some friends this summer. Had a meal with them in the morning, and after the meal, we're having some chat. I was chatting with the fellow. His name was John, and he offered me some coffee to drink. Now, those of you who know me know that the last few years I have kind of an unusual diet, particularly with what I drink. I rarely drink anything but water. So he offered me some kind of coffee, and I said, no thanks, I appreciate it. And I said, God didn't make that at creation. And he said, I can get you grape juice. I said, well, God didn't make that at creation either. And he said, well, God made the grapes. I said, well, I would eat the grapes. So he turned that around and said, wait a minute. He said, is that how you do with your technology as well? I thought, ouch, that's a reality check. But again, I think good for us to think about what is our view on technology. Do we take God's view? So I'd like to look at three things tonight. We want to look at the scriptural basis for our approach to technology. We want to look at technologies of our day and kind of look at the last 150 years or so and look at some actual technologies. And some of the ones that are becoming mainstream just in the last 10, 15 years and some of them, you know, today. And then lastly, we want to look at practical strategies for wholeness and victory in our use of technology. Romans 12, 1 and 2. I beseech you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that ye present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service. And be not conformed to this world, but be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind, that ye may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. So God calls us to commit our bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God, not looking to the world for our cues, but being transformed by Christ, renewing our mind. So we can demonstrate for the world, no matter what era we live in, no matter what technology we have, we can demonstrate for the world what is good, acceptable, and perfect will of God. 1 Thessalonians 5:23. Now may the God of peace himself sanctify you completely, and may your whole spirit and soul and body be kept blameless at the coming of our Lord Jesus Christ. And I read that verse because it calls out the three parts of man: body, soul, and spirit. God wants all of them to be blameless. So we present our bodies as a living sacrifice. God wants our body, soul, and spirit to be blameless. And I had to think about that connection between body, soul, and spirit. You know, when Jesus talked about looking at a woman with lust, it's like committing adultery with her in your heart. And if you think about that, that takes body and soul. Okay, so it's a looking at the woman, but there's also the lusting after the woman, which is something that happens in our mind. Okay, that connection between body, soul, and spirit. And I want to emphasize that because I think we want to embrace that connection. So our spirit, our relationship with Christ, affects our ability to have healthy thoughts and emotions. How we are disciplined with our body and things like getting rest, healthy diet, exercise, that's going to impact our ability to live in victory. There are connections here. Our relationship with our loved ones, spouse, parents, children, and other social connections, particularly at church, these affect our relationship with God. So healthy balance of work, you know, working too much, neglecting relationships is going to be harmful. ability to make good decisions. All these are meaningful, having a healthy soul, our mind, will, and emotions. So as we think about this, a lack of health in one area, body, soul, or spirit, I believe will eventually show up as a health issue in another area, in one of the other three. So let's talk a little bit about what's at stake here as we look at technology and we look at body, soul, and spirit being blameless, having our bodies as a living sacrifice. In 1 Corinthians 9, you may want to turn there. I'm going to read verses 24 through 27, 1 Corinthians 9. Right before this passage, Paul is talking about how he's doing whatever he needs to do to minister to people. To those under the law, he's being under the law. He's finding ways to find common ground with his audience so that he can win them to Christ, so that they can understand the gospel message, so that he doesn't trip them up by his own actions. So he says, I've become all things to all people that I might by all means save some. And then in verse 24, do you not know that in a race all the runners run, but only one receives the prize? So run that you may obtain it. Every athlete exercises self-control in all things. They do it to receive a perishable wreath, but we an imperishable. So I do not run aimlessly. I do not box as one beating the air, but I discipline my body and keep it under control, lest after preaching to others, I myself should be disqualified. And that's in the ESV. So that last verse that where it talks about keeping our body under control, being disciplined, so that I'm not disqualified. So after I preached all these people, I helped people come to Christ, and then they see my life and it was a fraud. Not wanting to be disqualified. You can probably think of someone you've known or someone you've known about. Maybe a high-profile Christian leader that's been disqualified due to their sinful choices. I've experienced that enough of times. And just recently, again, there was a man that was went to our church for almost all my life until a few years ago, and now he's going to sister church, and it recently became known that he's been living a life of sin and has been deceiving his family and the church. I think that's an example of the disqualification Paul is talking about. We don't want sin in our lives to become a disqualification for our ministry. And there's many others as well, and if you've never experienced that, you probably will sometime. And of course, our hope is in Christ. Our hope is not in an individual person. But that affects us. It's like a punch to the gut, if you will, to kind of process through when we learn about something like that. Someone we respected, and we learn that they were not the person we thought they were, or they made decisions that they would have known were wrong. So the stakes are high. We need to be disciplined in all things, just like a competitive runner, but we're not, as Paul says, we're not running just for an earthly crown. We're running for eternal life, and we are preaching the gospel to the world. So it takes work, it takes effort, it takes persistence. We don't fall into a disciplined life by accident. It's something we not only choose, but continue to work at, just as Paul did. The other thing I think is important to think about with technology is that Satan is out to lie, kill, and destroy, and he's willing to use whatever avenues he can, including technology, to do so. The other thing I want to emphasize, too, when we think about technology, is I don't view this as just a young person's issue. Maybe sometimes that's emphasized and we say, well, the young people should be doing better. And I don't know if that's necessarily untrue, but I believe this is an issue for all of us. And I think if we believe this is an issue for a certain age group, we are missing the point tonight. Of course, we do want to be aware of and to protect our children and youth from unnecessary temptations and harm, but we should be concerned about ourselves. We should be concerned about adults of all ages in our church, brothers and sisters. So with that as a biblical basis for our approach to technology, let's talk about the history of modern technology. I'm going to look at the last 150 years or so, and I'll first of all say this. I'm sure all of us have different experiences with technology. I'm sure there's different levels of adoption of different technologies in this group, and that's okay. But I think that what I'm going to share tonight, you will find relevance in at least something I say. Some of it may or may not make sense, but I think there will be relevant information for you tonight. So as we look back 150 years or so, the first technology I want to talk about is a light bulb. So around 1880, at that point, over 50% of homes had a light bulb in it. I'm sorry, the light bulb was invented in 1880, and around 1920, so about 100 years ago, over 50% had a light bulb in their house. I'm told that this invention changed sleep patterns more than any other one invention in the history of man. Okay, so now it was fairly easily to turn the light on, stay up late, get up early, whatever it is. It was no longer, our schedules were no longer built around daylight. No longer needed to be as much. So that's something we don't think about so much. And maybe some of you, I suppose some of you probably grew up in a home without electricity, but that's been a norm in our culture, probably for everyone here for all your life, that light bulbs have been kind of standard in modern homes. Vehicles. Around the same time, actually, over 50% of people had a car. Late 1920s. Again, probably everyone here is used to having cars on the road from childhood. But you think about how that's impacted our lives. Think about how it's impacted our church. I don't know how far you drove tonight, but probably for a lot of you, you drove a distance that, had you not had a vehicle, it wouldn't have been practical for you to be a part of this church and to attend on time. So we're able to commute to work farther. We're able to attend a church that's farther away from us with the vehicle. Again, major invention and technology in the last 150 years or so. And now as we look at the last 25 years or so, we see a lot of internet and device technology that has developed. So the internet, around the year 2000, 50% of homes in the United States had internet. And these statistics, by the way, I'm focusing on the United States in general, not necessarily worldwide. So 25 years ago, internet became the norm in homes. It wasn't at the speeds we have today, but it was something, and it was there. Social media, how about that for a disruptive technology? Facebook launched in 2004, 21 years ago, and has maintained relative dominance in the social media industry ever since. By around 2011, 50% of U.S. adults were using social media, mostly Facebook at the time, but not just Facebook. So I describe social media like this. Social media created a way of staying loosely and shallowly connected to a ridiculous amount of people around the world while impacting the depth of our relationships with the ones we love the most. So your experience may be different, I hope it is. But I think that's how I would capture the way social media works. We stay connected with people we may not know, we may not care about, we may not share values with, we may be on the other end of the globe, but we can stay connected with what's going on in their lives. Facebook has around 3 billion users. YouTube today is considered a social media platform. I've known it more as a video platform, but it is considered social media today. It's one of the larger ones. WhatsApp is on the list for social media. I use that for messaging. I guess it's considered social media as well. It can be used for that somewhat. There's Instagram, WeChat, TikTok, Telegram, Facebook Messenger, and Snapchat. These are some of the big platforms. Most of these platforms have over 1 billion users globally. So social media, about 14 years ago, was adopted by the majority of people in the United States, majority of adults. Around the same time, we had the smartphone. That became available in 2013 on all the large cell phone carriers. And at that point, over 50% of adults in the U.S. had a smartphone as well. So a smartphone took the computing power of a desktop computer a few years earlier and fit it small, right in our pocket. We can take it with us. So instant access to not only text messages and phone calls, but the entire World Wide Web and all the social media platforms I just mentioned. In fact, I would venture to say that the vast majority of social media interaction is done through smartphones rather than computers. So let's shift gears just a little bit and look at what are some technologies that are happening right now today. And think about the addictiveness of it, and let's talk about some of the current trends. So what are the current things that we're getting to that tipping point where we got the majority of people adopting? 50% or so in the United States. One of the things that's been in place, this is kind of subtle, but I think it's important to mention it, is personalized search result and personalized content on your experiences on your smartphone, web browsers, apps, and such like. Technology today, whether you have an account or not, is generally going to figure out about what age you are, what your gender is, and what things you like. And it's going to feed you content like that. Okay? So if you like reading things that favor, let's just say Republicans, I'm not here to be political, but Republicans, you're going to get fed content that affirms your views, that tends to affirm your views because you're reading these things. So it's helpful in terms of it helps us find the things we're looking for, but it also gives us feedback. It ends up giving us feedback and makes us feel like, oh yeah, everyone else feels the same way I do. And if they don't, they're rather foolish. It tends to give us that information. So kind of groups people together in groups. These people like this, so let's make them all feel good. That's how it works. So I think there's several dangers here. One is it limits our exposure to opposing viewpoints, and I think weakens our critical thinking. Another trend today is Internet of Things. How many of you heard of that term before? Internet of Things. Okay, we got a few. So the idea is just things other than computers and smartphones are connected to the internet. So it, I think, makes us even more dependent on our smartphones and our computers and the internet. But there's practical things like door locks that are smart and connect to the internet, can be controlled remotely. There's thermostats to control your heating and cooling remotely. Some of these have been around for a while. There's some more security cameras. Now a lot of them have AI integration. So instead of needing to, you know, see, review a security camera and look at the events when there was motion, it might tell you, okay, there was a dog walked through at this time of day and there was a person at this time and I got a license plate at this time. So makes a much more efficient use of it. Here's a product that was interesting. I recently went to purchase a wireless grill probe because I wanted to have I typically haven't grilled with a probe, but I thought I want to have one so I can, you know, monitor the temperature of the meat, make sure it's safe to eat before I take it off the grill. I want a wireless one so I don't have the cord going in and out of the grill. Well, for less than $40 on Amazon, I found one that was not only the wireless, but it was smart. It's connected to the internet. So, it has a real nice app. It shows me how the temperature is rising, gives me graphs, shows what the temperature is at different points in the probe. Again, very affordable, an example of the Internet of Things. Cars increasingly becoming internet connected. It's very common to have small devices that have a cellular connection that they're capable of. So more and more things just all over the place are connected to the internet. And then we have AI, and I think this is a big one. If you do a search on Google, you will likely be greeted with an AI summary. Instead of a list of websites at the top of the page, you will have a summary where AI basically tries to answer your question without you ever needing to go to the website, summarizes it for you. It kind of gives us the next level of experience and kind of makes interacting with the internet become more like a conversation. just a few weeks ago, I was on a trip to San Francisco, and I hadn't been there for quite a few years. I was on a business trip, and I was like, wow, some of the technology in use there. I got to ride in an autonomous vehicle. It didn't have a driver. It took me where I needed to go through the city. I saw an unmanned coffee shop. Just a robot in there getting drinks ready for people. And I rode in the elevator with a robot. It was a just little thing on wheels, about 3 or 4 foot high, and it would do room service in the hotel. So AI is powering these types of inventions and adoption in our society. So I want to share in particular a warning with AI, with this emerging technology, and that's the use of AI as a companion, as a girlfriend or a boyfriend, so to speak, or an emotional companion. So most of the chatbots or AI use, when you basically write a message in, ask it to do something for you, ask you for a question, it will actually support that kind of conversation where you can ask, you know, you can have a conversation about your feelings and your beliefs and all that. But there's also some that are designed just for the use of being a companion or a romantic partner. And I think that's very dangerous. I think that can take us to the next level of being isolated. You know, I talked about social media isolating us from the ones we love and care about the most. And AI use of as a emotional companion is a next level of that, I think, compared to social media. Some of these come complete with a hologram, which is like a 3D laser rendered image. Some are a humanoid robot. Obviously, there's a lot of money that would go into that. But it's basically a make-believe companion. Again, it might be emotional companion, even romantic, but one that probably will never disagree with you. It will be compassionate. It'll always validate your feelings. And I believe that's, of course, very dangerous and very unrealistic to being successful and having healthy human relationships. So I got the following information from an AI summary on Google, so I'll have that caveat. But I read about a 14-year-old boy that took his life after a long relationship with an AI chatbot. I found another story of a Greek woman, married woman, who had her AI chatbot read her husband's coffee grounds, and that predicted he was having an affair. After being told this, she refused to believe anything else. So you see some of the dangers of this type of technology. So I think that's, again, very unhealthy. I think that interrupts relationships that are most important to us. It creates unrealistic expectations of our relationships with people. And I think especially for younger people, will stunt normal and healthy social development and ability to build relationships. Having a relationship, if I can call it that, with AI, is going to reinforce one's thinking. Again, it's going to reduce our ability to think critically, like you and I were if we were to have a conversation. Of course, there's a dependency that can be created, potentially an addiction. Again, sometimes people feel like and are actually convinced that this is a relationship with a real person. They've been known to recommend a person leave his or her spouse, or to lead people onto spiritual awakenings, with some even urging users to take their own life or take another person's life. And I think what we're seeing is just the early stages of this. There is a massive investment going on in data centers, if you follow news and technology, and it's going on right here in our backyard, so to speak. There is a $6 billion data center that's in the works in Lancaster. There's a $15 billion facility that's in the works in near Carlisle. I think that's several hundred acres they plan to use for that. And there's billions of dollars being spent to restart Three Mile Island as a nuclear facility just to provide the needed electricity for these data centers. So I expect what we're seeing today is going to become, it's going to become more and more available. It's going to be quicker. It's going to be more and more just in front of us. And hard to avoid, which again, I don't believe, I'm not here to say AI is inherently evil. I don't necessarily believe that. I think it can be a very useful tool just like all the other technology we talked about, but also just like the other technology we talked about, it has its dangers as well that we need to be aware of. So that is going something that we are going to see ramp up in the coming years, I believe. All right, I want to talk a little bit about neuroscience, the biology of our brain, and how our brain interacts with technology. And I read a book about a year and a half ago called The Willpower Instinct, and it was basically a study of people's ability to be disciplined, be self-disciplined. And they have a chapter where they talk about technology, and they talk about what they call the brain's big lie. So our brains mistake the promise of the reward for a guarantee of happiness, so we chase satisfaction from things that don't deliver. Okay, so let me unpack that a bit. For the young people, you understand this. When your phone goes ding and you know you got a message or someone commented on your social media post, you feel something. You feel an excitement. You don't even know what the message is. You don't even know if it's respectful or supportive of what you... you don't even know if it's something positive, but immediately your brain gets a dopamine rush. Your brain releases dopamine, and it's actually feels better than it does when you actually read the comment. So when our brain expects a reward, it's a more powerful feeling than the reward itself, if I can use that term reward, or that perceived reward. So technology is very powerful in this regard. We get a dopamine hit from social media, from checking our devices to see if we got a notification, maybe refreshing a web page that we expect to be updated, whatever it might be, that new information we're expecting, that feedback from other people that feels good. Just the idea that that's coming feels really good to us. So think about how you feel when your phone goes ding or it vibrates and you think someone's reaching out to you. That's typically more rewarding than when you actually read that message. In the book, they say this in regards to technology. There are few things ever dreamed of, smoked, or injected that have as addictive an effect on our brains as technology. This is how our devices keep us captive and always coming back for more. I thought that is a strong statement. I'll read that again. There are few things ever dreamed of, smoked, or injected that have as addictive an effect on our brains as technology. So I appreciate how, as Anabaptist churches, we've recognized the addictive nature of things like drugs and alcohol, and I'm very grateful for that. This book is saying those are actually less, in terms of addictive nature, those are actually less than technology. Pretty sobering thought. Their viewpoint is that the cell phones, the internet, and social media have accidentally exploited our reward system, you know, that dopamine hit, that addictiveness. But they say computer and video game designers intentionally manipulate our minds to keep players hooked. In 2005, this is 20 years ago already, 28-year-old man died from cardiovascular failure after playing the game StarCraft for 50 hours straight. He had refused to eat or sleep, wanting only to continue playing. So again, 20 years ago, young man in his 20s was playing a video game, wouldn't eat, wouldn't sleep, just wanted to keep playing until he literally fell over dead. I believe that they say, you know, cell phones, the internet have accidentally exploited the reward system. I think maybe, I don't know how it was discovered, but I believe it sells. You know, when the technology industry has figured out how to make most of the people get phones and make most of the people coming back to their phones every few minutes or every few hours, and if they don't, they're going to feel bad, that sells. That creates a business model and has created a very powerful economy in the technology industry. So I share all that to say, learn to recognize what triggers a dopamine hit for you. Learn to recognize that feeling where it's like, oh, I feel really good. What is that? That may be just a little bit, that may be addictive for you and something you want to pay attention to. Understand the power of that feeling and be able to learn from that and create healthy boundaries around technology. All right, so let's talk about practical strategies for living in wholeness and victory. As followers of Christ, giving our bodies a living sacrifice, having our body, soul, and spirit be blameless. So if we're to thrive with our body, soul, and spirit, we need to train like a runner. Again, this takes work. We need to discipline our body, and I would say we need to discipline our technology. We need to tell the technology we use what to do for us rather than it telling us what to do. And too often, when it's addictive, our technology is controlling us, not us controlling the technology. So we need to learn that discipline, keep it under control so that we're not disqualified. So the first point I have under that is determine healthy boundaries for technology use. And I'm thinking specifically of smartphone, social media, AI. Learn to recognize how you're being manipulated by social media. Anyone ever hear of FOMO, fear of missing out? Yeah, that's a technology, social media in particular, that's a feeling, if you will, that is exploited by social media. It's like, well, if I don't check social media, I don't know what's going on. I'm gonna miss an important event in my friends' lives. I'm not gonna be connected. I'm gonna lose my relationships. I'm gonna be out of the loop. There's also, you know, most social media, there's no bottom of the page. When you scroll to see what other people have posted, there's no bottom of the page. As long as you're willing to scroll, there's more there for you. That is intentional to keep you using the technology. The more you use it, the more money they make, even though you don't pay for it, maybe in terms of you paying dollars. You're paying for it with your time and your attention. For men, you know, be aware of the content you watch, okay? And technology and social media tends to make things more and more suggestive. After a while, it's more and more sexualized content, okay? That's what you're going to tend to see. That's one of technology's way of manipulating you, just a little bit at a time, just kind of bend the rules, and after a while, you realize, wait, I'm at a place I don't want to be. For women, it can be more about discontentment. Maybe on social media you see how, oh, others are more beautiful than I am. They have a more perfect life. They have a more perfect spouse, whatever it is, and can tend to kind of have discontentment take root. I heard about this one recently. I don't know how many of you use the Be Real app. It's apparently a social media. I've not used it. I know some of the young people at our church use it. And my understanding of how the Be Real app works is you're supposed to take a picture of yourself and what you're doing, I guess every day. Forgive me, I'm limited on what this technology does. But you post it to your group of friends, but they can't see your photo until they post a picture of themselves. And I thought, how manipulative a social media that is. And I'm not saying that's a wrong technology or harmful technology, but for some it probably is. You know, that idea that that kind of like forced contribution that, you know, forces you to put content on there for you to be able to access others, to me feels very manipulative. And I'll just say there's a lot of junk on social media. If you've been on social media long enough, you probably can appreciate that. And that takes work to you know, if you're on social media and you don't want to see what I'm going to call junk, that takes action. I know, you know, my experience is I got to travel around the world, meet a lot of people. We did our youth ministry at Mine Road, and after a while, you know, these children that came to our clubs are you know, getting older and becoming teenagers, and I got to friend them on social media, and after a while, I'm realizing there's some content on here that is really junk. And I don't want to spend time on it. I don't want to see it. So there's ways to deal with that. You can unfriend. You know, if there's a person that's posting content, you can unfriend them. Or you can just quit social media or a particular platform. And I will assure you, My wife and I both experienced this. Now we had both used Facebook for a time, and today we have very limited to no use of Facebook ourselves. And we actually did that right before COVID, where we kind of just avoided Facebook in particular. And it was incredible how freeing that was when we had COVID shutdowns and there were all these ideas and all these conspiracies. And I started hearing things from people I knew well, and I was like, what in the world are they talking about? This is crazy. Some of the ideas that were floating around that became kind of mainstream ideas, and we were very grateful that we were not exposing ourselves to these conversations that were not helpful for us to kind of process through the world's reality at the moment. So I can assure you that you can live a healthy, fulfilling life in 2025 without social media, and actually, it might even be more fulfilling. There's a young man at our church, worked through some addictions himself, and he talks about that. He said that was a real turning point for him, getting rid of his social media. So that's a real thing. Be aware of that. Be aware of the content that you're seeing. So here's another idea. Let's say there's an app, there's a social media platform, whatever it is that maybe you don't want to eliminate entirely just yet, but you realize you're spending too much time on it, or you'd like to have less of it. Find ways to introduce friction. You know, just taking it from your main screen on your phone to another screen, or uninstalling the app so that if you want to go on that, you actually have to go in the browser and put in your username and password, and it's more friction before you can get to it. And often, you know, you won't go there for, you know, what you think will be 30 seconds that turns into 5 minutes or 10 minutes or 30 minutes. So find, you know, things that are, you're spending too much time on, avoid the one-click ease, okay? These apps are designed to have you just touch them and it's right there. Okay, find ways to actually recreate friction in the process. Amazon, they want you to buy stuff on their platform. They remove as much friction as possible, as few clicks, automatic, you can buy the stuff and have it shipped to your door. So you kind of got to work the other way and say, how do I make a little more friction if I want to use something less? Set boundaries around when you use technology. You know, how many of us tend to wake up in the mornings and the first thing we see is our phone and the notifications or the emails or whatever it is? And how many of us do that right before we go to bed? And how healthy is that for our rest at night? How healthy is that for our mindset as we approach the day? Very healthy to take that last hour at least before you go to bed. Don't have any screen time. You're gonna rest better. You're gonna be more present with the people around you, and you're probably gonna wake up feeling different. So I want to touch on children and technology just a little bit, and this is probably a whole study in itself, but my wife and I years ago visited a church, was out of the area, and they had segregated seating. And I watched this child, I don't remember the age of the child, probably I'm gonna say about 3 to 4 year old range. I watched this child walk from the one side of the church, I believe from his or her dad, over to his or her mom, all the while holding a cell phone, watching cartoons, videos, whatever it was, and being almost oblivious, like literally walking around like this. I thought this child's gonna walk into a bench or a wall or something. I found that a little bit repulsive, like, wait a minute, how are we teaching our children to be present? But I say that just to be aware of how technology impacts a child. My understanding, and this is secular studies, is that screen time for a child that's less than a few years old, I'm going to say less than 2 or 3, can have serious negative impacts on their brain's development. Children that age need a lot of, I'm going to just call it rough and tumble play, okay? They hear things, they smell things, they see it, they feel it, they experience it through all their senses. And when they're left with a screen, they see and they hear, but none of the other senses are present, okay? It affects their brain's development. And of course, children even older than that, screen time tends to negatively impact social development, interpersonal skills, creativity, self-image, and all that. Now, I do believe we do well to think about that as moms and dads. How are we preparing our children to be successful in a world as adults where there's a lot of technology? But it should be appropriate, and let's not do it in a way that harms their development when they're young. All right, here's another thought as we think of practical strategies and victories and living in victory, and that is develop a lifestyle of transparency. I think this is good for all of us to do. If you're doing well, you're not dealing with addiction, you have healthy habits, healthy boundaries or technology, it's a great thing to do. And if you've identified something you want to change, maybe it's a time waste or maybe it's a sinful habit, it's good to develop a lifestyle of transparency. And actually, you can use technology to do it, believe it or not. So good uses of technology. There's apps. If you have a smartphone, there's apps. My wife and I use this. It's free, called Life 360. And it simply shares your location in real time. So at any time of the day or night, my wife can go on her phone and see where I'm at, and I can do the same with her. It's a level of transparency. You can see location history. Where were they today? And my wife likes to use it it's automatically notifying her when I leave work. Then she knows about when I'm going to be home. There is, of course, accountability apps and content filters. Custodio, that's another one I use. Custodio, it's designed for children, but it's great for adults as well. Accountable to You is another app that's used to share what you're doing online with others. Beyond the technology, though, there's a mindset. There's a way of thinking with that you want to adopt. And that's make confession and truth a way of life. You know, I had a situation here recently myself when I recognized the failure that I had personally. And I brought it to life. I brought it to light. I had a relationship with my wife. I shared it with her. I had some other close friends at church, some other men that I shared this with. These are people that want to see me thrive, want to see my good. And I confess that, brought it to the light. So have the relationships like that, that you can do that, okay? Do that quick, do that early. Don't wait until you have an addictive behavior or pattern in your life. And then I think when you recognize something that you want to change, use escalating action to address an unwanted behavior, an unwanted habit. So, you know, be transparent with people and be accountable. If you're going to try something, tell people about it. Say, hey, I'm going to remove this tech. You know, I'm going to quit XYZ social media. It's been a problem for me. I'm seeing a lot of content that's inappropriate. I want to quit using that. Tell people about that. Remove the apps from your phone. If there's a place where you're tempted, don't go to that place, or find ways. If you need to go to that place, have some accountability, have someone with you. Maybe you need to get rid of your smartphone. That sounds kind of drastic, and I don't think there's a lot of people that would want to do that. But look, if that's what it takes for you to overcome a sin in your life, that should be something you're willing to do. It's interesting that 12, 14 years ago, most of us didn't even have a smartphone. And now we would think of it as odd if an adult doesn't have one. We tend to think that way. Be able to take escalating action for you to experience victory if you identify something, an unwanted behavior or an addiction in your life. Identify the patterns, change the narrative, see what's happening that's causing me to fall into this sin, what's causing me to whatever it is that I don't want to do, and learn to change the narrative. The other thing I want to encourage is avoid what I'm going to call third world situations where accountability is lacking. So I'll just give an example that I think will help you understand it. So let's say I have kind of my family network, my wife, my children, and my extended family that I spend time with. I have my church family. I spend time with. I have my work. I go to work, and there's certain times I'm expected to be there, expected to behave in a certain way. And there's a certain amount of accountability with that. But what if I have a group of friends that I go and do things with on the weekend, and they have no connection with my home church, they have no connection with my work, they have no connection with my family? That's a vulnerable, potentially a vulnerable situation where accountability can be lacking. And if you look at some of the high profile moral failures, there were things like that, where there was this situation, whatever it was, where these leaders did not have the accountability that they did in a typical situation. So find ways to avoid that. You know, make sure your life is not disconnected to the point where, you know, the way you behave and the way you live at a certain time or a certain place is actually clearly out of alignment with your values. All right, and then the third one is be intentional with community. You will become more like the people you spend the most time with. This is, again, comes from the book, The Willpower Instinct. They say willpower and temptation are contagious. Now, it's not contagious in that it spreads because I got too close to someone, so I got sick. But we are highly likely to be influenced by those we're closest to, and we're not as independent as we might imagine. And here's the narrative they gave in the book for that. They tracked obesity in the United States. And in 1990, there was no state in the nation that had an obesity rate over 15%. But as of 2022, all states, territories, and DC had 20% or higher rates of obesity. So we had no state over 15%. Now, 3 years ago, we have all the states over 20. And we even have 22 of the states that are 35% or higher. So we have obesity spread like an epidemic through our country in the last several decades. And they would say, and I think I agree, that as the more it became normal, the more it became okay. Well, it just kind of became normalized and spread, where had we not had the influence and observed other people, there would not have been as many people overeating. So willpower spread not so much through physical contact, but rather through social connections. We're highly likely to have willpower, or the lack thereof, reinforced by those we know, like, and trust. And God designed us to connect with others. We naturally tend to mirror the behavior of those we're with. So, and I think that's one of the beauties of church. I think that's a beauty of church, to be close with people that are going to spur us on to become more like Christ. So when we observe others sinning, ignoring rules, using profanity, following their impulses, it actually can weaken our willpower. And this can be whether it's in person, whether it's video, movies, whatever it is, same rules apply. When we observe others behaving more appropriately than we are, we're more likely to emulate that behavior as well, and become more aware of our actions that actually don't align, that could improve. So the videos you watch, you're going to increase your likelihood that you're going to become like the people on the screen. So think about that. And I probably don't need to tell you that most videos available today, the majority is not going to be ones that where the people align with your values, or are going to spur you on to become more like Christ. And there are some, of course, but be aware of that. Plug into community. I think, again, church is a big one. Evaluate your friendships. Are the people you spend a lot of time with ones that you want to become more like them? And then, of course, be a person that other followers of Christ want to be like. Okay, so be the kind of person that will spur others on. Consider the media you take in. You're becoming like the people you are closest to and you look up to. All right, so I have a story yet, and just a few words to wrap it up. But before I do that, I want to let just a little bit of time if anyone has any questions or comments. Yeah, I appreciate that word. There's a lot of danger. As I shared, Satan's here to lie, kill, and destroy, and he's going to use technology to do that. And it's we're going to have to be very intentional.
He comes out as an angel. Comes out as an angel, like transforming himself into an angel.
Mm-hmm. The most subtle ways. Anyone else? Okay, I want to share a story yet, and this is a going back to Paul's what Paul talked about with runners and being disciplined. This is a story about a man that took on a running challenge. Gordy Onsley in 1974 was planning to participate in a horse race in California. It was 100 miles long. They did this race every year. And they had 24 hours to finish the race. So a man would ride on a horse, and it was a race to see who could get done first. And I think he had maybe done the race once or twice before. And approaching this year's race, his horse was lame, and he didn't have a horse to use. And so he had this idea that he's going to run this. He's going to see if he can run it himself. And some people said, oh, that's impossible. You can never do that, which motivated him even more. So he started, he actually started a few minutes before the horses, so he didn't, so they weren't in his way and clogging up the trail. He got a little bit of a head start. But it was a very hot day, and he was actually a pretty good runner, and he ran for tens of miles, and it was around 107 degrees, around mile 50, he's down in this canyon. And it's right by the creek. And there's a horse that's seriously in trouble. One of the other riders, racers. And he helped this man with the horse. I think the horse was in the creek. And he could tell this horse is probably not going to make it. Horse is going to die. Probably from heat exhaustion and just and all that. So he decided if he's not careful, he might die as well. So he said I'm going to quit. I'm going to climb up out of this canyon until I get to a road somewhere, and I'm going to quit. But as he was climbing up out of there, as he was walking this trail, he thought, you know, what would happen if I would just take one more step? And before he got out to the road where he was going to quit, he decided that as long as he could take one more step, he would take that step. So when he took that step, if he could take the next one, he would take it. He went on to finish this race in less than 24 hours. And today that's a very famous race, 100-mile race. But that was in 1974. And he made that choice to take one more step. So my challenge to you, brothers and sisters, is let's push back the darkness. Let's push back the tendency of technology to control us, and let's take one step, and let's step towards Christ. Maybe for you, that's continuing strongly in victory. Maybe it's taking the next step of bringing your secret to light. Maybe it's setting some new boundaries with technology or social media. Or maybe it's the next step in living a more transparent life. Because despite what the world thinks, victory is possible. We can live in victory. And so I'd encourage you to taking one more step towards that victory and towards being like Christ in the midst of the technology we have today. Thank you very much.